This is cassette number 12.
Elbows on the table, Kaylin held her face in her hands for a time, trembling with anger at the insanity of what she was hearing. She finally looked up, meeting her half-brother's gaze. "Harold, Galia is part of the Daharan Empire. Galia has a queen only at the indulgence of the Empire. Queen though she may be, even if she does not recognize the rule of the Daharan Empire, she is still, as she always has been, subordinate to the Mother Confessor of the Midlands. As Mother Confessor, as well as the leader of the Daharan Empire in Lord Rahl's absence, I formally terminate that indulgence. Cirilla is now without authority and is removed from office. She is no longer the queen of anything, much less Galia. You are ordered to return to Ebenicia, to put Cirilla under arrest for her own protection, to release Jebra, and to return to this army with the seer and all Galian forces except a home guard for the crown city. Mother Confessor, I'm sorry, but my queen has ordered..." Kaylin slammed the flat of her hand down on the table. "Enough!" He fell silent as Kaylin rose. With her fingertips pressed to the table, she leaned closer to him. "As Mother Confessor, I am commanding you to carry out my orders at once. That is final. I will hear no more." The room seemed gripped by the grave consequence of what was happening. Each forbidding face watched, waiting to see how it was going to go. Harold spoke in a voice that reminded Kaylin of her father's. "I realize that it may make no sense to you, Mother Confessor, but I must choose my duty to my people above my duty to you. Cirilla is my sister. King Wyborn always told me to run a good army. An officer must obey his queen. My men down here are ordered by their queen to return at once to protect Galia. I am a man bound by my honor to protect my people, as ordered by my queen." "You pompous fool! How dare you speak to me of your honor? You are sacrificing the lives of innocent people to your delusions of honor. Honor is honesty to what is, not blind duty to what you wish to be. You have no honor, Harold." Kaylin sank into her chair. She looked past him to the side, staring into the hearth, into the flames. "I have given you my orders. Do you refuse to obey them?"
"I must refuse, Mother Confessor. Let me say only that it is not out of malice."
"Harold," she said in a flat tone without looking at him, "you are committing treason."
"I realize that you may see it that way, Mother Confessor."
"Oh, I do. I do indeed. Treason to your people, treason to the Midlands, treason to our Daharan Union against the Imperial Order, and treason against the Mother Confessor. What do you suppose I ought to do about it?"
"I would expect that if you feel so strongly, you would have me put to death, Mother Confessor."
She looked up at him. "If you have enough sense to realize that, then what good will it do for you to stick to the orders of a madwoman? It will only bring your death, and then you will not be able to carry out your queen's orders. Staying to your course can only leave your people without your aid, which is what you claim to put above all else. Why not simply do the right thing and help us to help your people? Since you refuse, you have shown yourself, in truth, to be without common sense, much less honor."
His eyes turned to her, filled with smoldering anger. The knuckles of his fists went white.
"I will be heard now, Mother Confessor. If I stand by my honor, even if it costs me my life, it will be honoring my family, my sister, my queen, and my homeland, a homeland forged by my father, King Wyborn, and my mother, Queen Bernadine. When I was young, my father, my sovereign king, was taken from my mother, my family, my homeland of Galia, by the confessors, taken by a confessor's power for their selfish desire of a husband for your mother, for her selfish desire for a strong man to father her a child, you. Now you, Mother Confessor, the daughter of that theft of that beloved man from us when I was but a boy, you would take me from my sister? Take her too from our land?
Take me from my duty to serve my queen, my land, and above all my people? The last duty my father charged me with before your mother took him from us and destroyed him for no reason but that he was good and she wanted him, was that I should always honor my duty to my sister and my land. I will carry out my father's last charge to me, even if you think it madness.
Caelan stared at him in cold shock. I'm sorry you feel that way, Harold. His face had aged and hardened. I know that you are not responsible for all that happened before you came to be, and I will always love that part of you that is my father, but I am still the one who must live with it all. Now I must be true to myself, to my own feelings.
Your feelings, she repeated.
Yes, Mother Confessor, those are my feelings, and I must put my faith in them.
Caelan swallowed past the painful constriction in her throat. Her fingers lying limply on the table before her tingled.
Faith and feelings. Harold, you are as mad as your sister.
She drew herself up straight and folded her hands. She shared a last look with her half-brother, a man she had never known, except in name, as she pronounced sentence on him.
Beginning at sunrise tomorrow, the Daharan Empire and Galia are at war. After sunrise tomorrow, if you are seen by me or any of our men, you will be put to death for the crime of treason. I will not allow those brave men out there to die for traitors. The Imperial Order will, in all likelihood, turn north up the Calasidran Valley. You will be alone. They will butcher every man in your army just as they butchered the people of Ebenicia. Jagang will give your sister to his men as a whore. It will be by your doing, Harold, for refusing to use your ability to think, and instead following your feelings and faith in what does not exist.
Harold, hands clasped behind his back, chin held up, said nothing as Caelan continued.
Tell Cirilla that she had better hope for the fate I have just described, because if the order does not come through Galia, I will. I have promised no mercy to the order. Galia's treason condemns her to the same fate as the order. If the order does not get Cirilla, then I swear I will, and when I get her, I am going to take her back to Aidendrill, and I am going to personally throw her back down into that pit from which you rescued her, and I am going to leave her down there with every criminal brute I can find for as long as she lives.
Harold's jaw dropped.
Mother Confessor, you wouldn't.
Caelan's eyes told him otherwise.
You will be sure to tell Cirilla what's in store for her. Jebra probably tried to tell her, and was thrown in a dungeon for it. Cirilla is refusing to see the open pit before her, and you are walking into it with her. Worse, you are taking your innocent people with you.
Caelan drew her royal Galian sword. She grasped either end in a hand. Gritting her teeth, she pulled the flat of the blade against her knee. The steel bent, then finally snapped with a loud report. She tossed the broken blade on the floor at his feet.
Now, get out of my sight.
He turned to leave, but before he took a step, Zed stood, holding out a hand as if to ask him to remain where he was.
Mother Confessor,
Zed said, choosing his words carefully,
I believe you are letting your emotions get in the way.
Harold gestured to Caelan, relieved to hear Zed's intercession.
Tell her, Wizard Zoranda, tell her.
Caelan couldn't believe her ears. She remained where she was, staring into Zed's hazel eyes.
Then, would you mind explaining my error of emotion, First Wizard?
Zed glanced at Harold, and then back to Caelan.
Mother Confessor, Queen Cirilla is obviously deranged. Prince Harold is not only doing her a disservice, but enabling her to bring only the specter of death to her people. If he chose the side of reason, he would be protecting his people and honoring his sister's past admirable service when she was of sound mind. Instead, he has betrayed his duty to his people by embracing what he wishes to be true about her instead of facing what is true. In this way, he is embracing death, and in this case, embracing death for his people too. Prince Harold has been justly found guilty of treason. Your emotions for him are interfering with your judgment. Obviously, he is now a danger to our cause, to the lives of our people, and to the lives of his own people. He cannot be allowed to leave."
Harold looked thunderstruck.
"But Zed!"
Zed's hazel eyes, too, were a terrible pronouncement of guilt. He waited as if challenging the man to further prove his treason. Harold's mouth moved, but he could offer no words.
"Does anyone disagree with me?"
Zed asked. He looked at Addie. She shook her head. Verna likewise shook her head. Warren stared at Harold for a moment, then shook his head.
Harold's expression turned indignant. "I am not going to stand for this. The mother confessor has given me until dawn to withdraw. You must honor her sentence."
He took two strides toward the door, but then paused, clutching his chest, twisting slowly as he started to sink, his eyes rolling up in his head, his legs folded, and he crashed to the floor. Kaelin sat stunned. No one moved or said anything. General Myford went down on one knee beside the body, checking Prince Harold for breath or pulse. The general looked up at Kaelin and shook his head. She passed her gaze from Zed to Addie to Verna to Warren. None revealed anything in their expression. Kaelin stood and spoke softly. "I don't ever want to know which one of you did this. I'm not saying you were wrong. I just don't want to know." The four gifted people nodded. At the door, Kaelin stood in the bright sunlight a moment, feeling the cold air on her face, searching until she saw Captain Ryan leaning against a stout young maple tree. He stood at attention as she strode out to him through the snow. "Radley, did Prince Harold tell you why he was coming here?" Calling him by his given name rather than his rank changed the nature of the question. His rigid posture slackened. "Yes, Mother Confessor. He said he had to tell you that he had been ordered back by his queen to defend Galia, and that he was further ordered to bring his men serving with you back to Galia with him."
"Then what are you doing here? Why did you and your men come along if he was to take everyone back?"
He lifted his square jaw and looked at her with clear blue eyes.
"Because we deserted, Mother Confessor."
"You what?" "Prince Harold gave me his orders just as I reported them. I told him that it was wrong, and could only harm our people. He said it was not for me to decide such things. He said it was not for me to think, but to follow orders. I fought with you, Mother Confessor. I believe I know you better than Prince Harold does. I know you are devoted to protecting the lives of the people of the Midlands. I told him that what Cirilla was doing was wrong. He was angry, and said it was my duty to follow my orders. I told him that, in that case, I was deserting the Galian army and was going to stand with you instead. I thought he was going to have me put to death for disobeying him, but he would have had to put all 1,000 of us to death because all the men felt the same way. A good many came forward to tell him so. The fire seemed to go out of him then, and he let us ride down here with him. I hope you aren't angry with us, Mother Confessor." Kaelin couldn't force herself to be the Mother Confessor at that moment. She put her arms around him. "Thank you, Bradley." She gripped his shoulders and smiled at him through her watery vision. "You used your head. I couldn't be angry with that.
You told us once we were a badger trying to swallow an ox whole. Looks to me you've taken to trying to do the same thing. If there ever was a badger who could swallow an ox whole, it would be you, Mother Confessor, but I guess we wouldn't want you to try it without us to help you do it."
They turned then, and saw General Myford directing some of his men. They were carrying Prince Harold's limp body out of the lodge, holding him by the shoulders and feet. His hands dragged through the snow.
"I figured this wasn't going to come to any good end," the young captain said. "Ever since Cirilla was hurt, Prince Harold just never seemed himself. I always loved the man. It hurt me to have to desert him, but he just wasn't making sense anymore."
Kaelin put a comforting hand on his shoulder as they watched the body being carried away.
"I'm sorry, Bradley,"
Like you, I always thought highly of him. I guess seeing his sister and his queen so long held in the grip of that kind of sickness just brought him to his wit's end. Try to keep your good memories of him.
I will, Mother Confessor.
Caelan changed the subject. I'll need one of your men to take a message to Cirilla. I was going to have Harold take it, but now we'll need a messenger.
I will see to it, Mother Confessor.
She only then realized how cold it was outside, and that she didn't have a cloak. As the captain went to get his men quartered and to pick out a man to act as messenger, Caelan went back inside the lodge. Kara was putting more wood on the hearth. Verna and Addie had gone. Warren was selecting a rolled map from the basket of maps and diagrams in the corner. As he was leaving, Caelan caught Warren's arm. She looked into the wizard's blue eyes, knowing they were much older than they appeared. Richard had always said that Warren was one of the smartest people he had ever met. Besides that, Warren's true talent was said to lie in the area of prophecy.
Warren, are we all going to die in this mad war?
His face softened with a shy but impish grin.
I thought you didn't believe in prophecy, Caelan.
She released his arm.
I guess I don't. Never mind.
Kara, leaving to find some more firewood, followed Warren out. Caelan warmed herself before the hearth as she stared at Spirit standing on the mantel. Zed rested a comforting hand on her shoulder.
What you had to say to Harold about using your mind, about reason, was very wise, Caelan. You were right.
Her fingers touched the buttery smooth walnut robes of Spirit.
It was what Richard said when he was telling me what he had finally come to understand about what he had to do. He said the only sovereign he could allow to rule him was reason.
Richard said that. Those were his very words?
Caelan nodded as she gazed at Spirit.
He said, the first law of reason is that what exists, exists. What is, is. And that from this irreducible bedrock principle, all knowledge is built. He said that was the foundation from which life is embraced. He said thinking is a choice, and that wishes and whims are not facts, nor are they a means to discover them. I guess Harold proved the point. Richard said reason is our only way of grasping reality, that it's our basic tool of survival. We are free to evade the effort of thinking, to reject reason, but we are not free to avoid the penalty of the abyss we refuse to see.
She listened to the fire crackling at her feet as she let her gaze wander over the lines of the figure he had carved for her. When she heard nothing from Zed, she looked over her shoulder. He was staring into the flames, a tear running down his cheek.
Zed, what's wrong?
The boy figured it out himself.
The old wizard's voice was the uneasy sum of loneliness and quiet pride.
He understands it. He interpreted it perfectly. He even came to it on his own, by applying it.
Came to what?
The most important rule there is, the wizard's sixth rule. The only sovereign you can allow to rule you is reason.
Reflections of the firelight danced in his hazel eyes.
The sixth rule is the hub upon which all rules turn. It is not only the most important rule, but the simplest. Nonetheless, it is the one most often ignored and violated, and by far the most despised. It must be wielded in spite of the ceaseless howling protests of the wicked. Misery, iniquity, and utter destruction lurk in the shadows outside its full light, where half-truths snare the faithful disciples, the deeply feeling believers, the selfless followers. Faith and feelings are the warm marrow of evil. Unlike reason, faith and feelings provide no boundary to limit any delusion, any whim. They are a virulent poison, giving the numbing illusion of moral sanction to every depravity ever hatched. faith and feelings are the darkness to reason's light. Reason is the very substance of truth itself. The glory that is life is wholly embraced through reason. Through this rule, in rejecting it, in rejecting reason, one embraces death.
By the next morning, about half of the Galilean force had vanished, returning to their homeland and queen as ordered by Prince Harold before his death. The rest, like Captain Ryan and his young soldiers, remained loyal to the Dharan Empire. Lieutenant Lydon, the former general, and his entire force of Keltish troops had also departed by morning. He left Kaelin a letter in it saying that with Galia choosing to break with the Dharan Empire, he had to return to help protect Kelton, as surely the selfish actions of the Galeans meant the Order would be more likely to come up the Kern River Valley and threaten Kelton. He wrote that he hoped the Mother Confessor would realize how grave was the danger to Kelton, and understand that it was not his intention to desert her or the Dharan Empire, but simply to help protect his people. Kaelin knew of the men leaving. General Myford and Warren had come to tell her. She had expected it and had been watching. She told General Myford to allow them to leave if they wished. War in their camp could come to no good end. The morale of the remaining men was boosted by a sense of being on the right side, of doing the right thing. That afternoon, as she was drafting an urgent letter to General Baldwin, commander of all Keltish forces, General Myford and Captain Ryan came to see her. After listening to their plan, she granted Captain Ryan permission to go with a like number of General Myford's hand-picked Dharan special forces to conduct raids on the Imperial Order force. Warren and six sisters were sent to accompany them. With the Imperial Order having moved so far back to the south, Kaelin needed information on what they were doing and what shape their force was in. More than that, though, with the foul weather in their favor, she wanted to keep pressure on the enemy. Captain Bradley Ryan and his band of nearly 1,000 were experienced mountain fighters and had grown up in just such harsh conditions. Kaelin had fought beside the captain and his young Galilean soldiers and had helped train them in the ways of fighting a vastly superior force. If only the enemy force did not number over 1,000,000. General Myford's special forces, which, until Kaelin had promoted him, he had ably commanded, were now led by Captain Zimmer, a young square-jawed bull-necked Dharan, with an infectious smile. They were everything Captain Ryan's young men were, tripled, experienced, businesslike under stress, tireless, fearless, and coolly efficient at killing. What made most soldiers blanch made them grin. They preferred fighting just such as this, where they were free of massive battlefield tactics and could instead use their special skills. They treasured being let off the leash to do what they did best. Rather than check them, Kaelin gave them a free hand. Each of those Dharans collected enemy ears. They felt a great fidelity to Kaelin, in part because she didn't try to rein them in and integrate them into the larger army, and perhaps more so because when they returned from missions, she always asked to see their strings of ears. They relished being appreciated. Kaelin intended to later send them to collect Galilean ears. Chapter 42. Kaelin glanced over her shoulder at the prelate bent over the map basket in the corner. It had been almost a full phase of the moon since Warren had left on the mission with Captains Ryan and Zimmer. Although it was difficult to judge accurately just how long such missions would last, they should have been back by now. Kaelin knew all too well the kind of worry that had to be churning beneath the woman's no-nonsense exterior.
"Verna," Kaelin asked as she rubbed her arms, "on your way past, could you throw some more wood on the fire, please?"
Kara hopped down off her stool where she was perched, watching over Kaelin's shoulder.
"I'll do it."
Verna pulled a map free, and on her way back to the table thanked Kara.
"Here it is, Zed. I think this better shows the area you're talking about."
Zed unfurled the new map over the top of the one already laid out on the table before Kaelin. It was a larger scale, giving more detailed look at the southern regions of the Midlands.
"Yes," Zed drawled as he peered at the new map. "See here?"
He tapped the Drun River.
See how narrow the lowlands are down so through here. That's what I was talking about. Rough country, with cliffs in places hemming the river. That's why I don't think they would try to go up the Drun Valley.
I suppose you're right, Verna said. Besides, Kalin waggled a finger over the area to the north on the first map. Up this way is mostly only Nicobarizi. They are rather isolated and so a tempting target, but they aren't a wealthy land. The plunder and trade goods would be slim. The Order has much more opportunity for conquest if they stay over here. Besides, can you see how difficult it would be for them to get their army back over the Rang Shaddaa Mountains if they went up the Drun? Strategically, it wouldn't make as much sense for them to go up that way. Verna idly twiddled with a button on her blue dress as she studied the map.
Yes, I see what you mean.
But your point is well taken, Kalin said. It wouldn't be a bad idea if you sent a sister or two to watch that area. Just because it doesn't make as much logistic sense, that doesn't mean Jigang wouldn't try it. Come spring, he's bound to move on us. We wouldn't want to be surprised to find the Imperial Order storming in the back door to Aidendrill. Kara answered the knock at the door. It was a head scout named Hayes. Kalin stood when she saw through the open door nearby trees that Captain Ryan was also making his way toward the lodge. Hayes saluted with a fist to his heart.
"Glad to see you back, Corporal Hayes," Kalin said.
"Thank you, Mother Confessor. It's good to be back."
He looked like he could use a meal. After Captain Ryan rushed in through the door, Kara pushed it shut against the blowing snow. Hayes stepped to the side, out of the way of the captain. Kalin was relieved to see the young Galleon officer.
"How did everything go, Captain? How is everyone?"
He pulled off his scarf and wool hat as he caught his breath. Verna looked to be holding hers.
"Good," the captain said. "We did well. The sisters were able to heal some of our wounded. Some needed to be transported for a ways before the sisters could see to them. That slowed us. We had a few losses, but not as many as we feared. Warren was a great help."
"And where is Warren?" Zed asked.
As if bitten by his name, Warren came in through the door, escorted by a swirling gust of snow. Kalin squinted at the slash of bright light until the door was pushed shut once more. She caught the look on Verna's face and recalled how light-hearted she always felt to see Richard back safely when they had been separated. Warren casually kissed Verna on the cheek with a quick peck. Kalin noticed the look they shared, even if no one else did. She was happy for them, but still, the reminder was like a jab at the pain of her helpless heartache and worry over Richard.
"Did you tell them?" Warren asked, unbuttoning his cloak.
"No," Captain Ryan said. "We haven't had a chance yet."
Zed's brow drew down.
"Tell us what?"
Warren heaved a sigh.
"Well, Verna's special glass worked better than we thought it had. We captured several men and questioned them at length. The ones we saw dead in the valley were only the ones who died at first."
Verna helped Warren shed his heavy snow-crusted cloak. She put it on the floor by the fire where Captain Ryan had laid his brown coat to dry.
"It seems," Warren went on, "that there were a great many, maybe another 60,000, 70,000, who didn't go blind, but who lost the sight in one eye, or have impaired vision. The Order couldn't very well abandon them, because they can still see well enough to stay with the rest. But more importantly, it is hoped that maybe those men will heal and regain full use of their sight, and their ability to fight."
"Not likely," Verna said.
"I don't think so either," Warren said. "But that's what they are thinking anyway. Another goodly number, maybe 25,000 or 30,000, are sick. Their eyes and noses red and horribly infected."
Verna nodded. "The glass will do that.
Then some more, maybe half that number, are having breathing difficulty."
"So," Kalin said, "with those killed and those injured enough to keep them from being effective fighters, that makes somewhere near 150,000 put out of the way by the glass dust."
"Quite an accomplishment, Verna."
Verna looked as pleased as Kalin.
"It was worth that horse ride scaring the wits out of me. It wouldn't have worked had you now thought of doing it that way."
"What kind of success did you have, Captain?"
Kara asked as she came to stand behind Kalin.
"Captain Zimmer and I had the kind of success we hoped for.
I guess we took out maybe 10,000 in the time we were down there.
Zed let out a slow whistle.
Pretty heavy fighting.
Not really. Not the way the Mother Confessor taught us to do it, and not the way Captain Zimmer works either. Mostly we eliminate the enemy as efficiently as possible and try to keep from having to fight at all. If you slit a man's throat in his sleep, you can accomplish a lot more, and you're less likely to get hurt yourself.
Kalin smiled. I'm glad you were such a good student.
Captain Ryan lifted a thumb.
Warren and the sisters were a great help at getting us where we needed to be without being discovered. Any word about the white cloaks yet? We could really use them. I can tell you for a fact that they would have enabled us to do more.
We just got in our first load the day before yesterday, Kalin told him. More than enough for your men and Captain Zimmer's. We'll have more within a few days.
Captain Ryan rubbed his hands, warming his fingers. Captain Zimmer will be pleased.
Zed gestured to the south.
Did you find out why they withdrew so far back over ground they'd taken?
Warren nodded. From the men we questioned, we found out that they have fever going through their camp. Nothing we did, just your regular fever that happens in such crowded camp conditions in the field. But they've lost tens of thousands of men to the fever. They wanted to withdraw, to put some distance between us, give themselves some breathing room. They aren't concerned about being able to push us out of the way when they wish.
That made sense. With their numbers, it was only natural for them to be confident, even cavalier, about dealing with any opposition. Kalin couldn't understand why Warren and Captain Ryan looked so downhearted. She sensed that despite their good news, there was something amiss.
Dear spirits, Kalin said, trying to give them some cheer. Their numbers are dwindling away like snow beside the hearth. This is better than...
Warren held up a hand.
I asked Hayes here to come and give you his report firsthand. I think you had better hear him out.
Kalin motioned the man to come forward. He stepped smartly up to her table and snapped to attention.
Let's hear what you have to report, Corporal Hayes.
His face looked chalky, and despite the cold, he was sweating.
Mother Confessor, my scout team was down to the southeast, watching the routes in from the wilds, and watching, too, in case the Order tried to swing wide around us. Well, I guess the short of it is, we spotted a column making its way west to resupply and reinforce the Order.
They're a big army, Kalin said. They would have supplies sent from their homeland to augment what they can get as spoils. A supply column would have men guarding them.
I followed them for a week just to get an accurate count.
How many? Kalin asked.
Well over 250,000, Mother Confessor.
Kalin's flesh tingled as if icy needles were dancing over it.
How many?
Verna asked.
At least 250,000 men-at-arms, plus drivers and civilians with the supplies.
Everything they had worked for, all the sacrifices, all the struggle to whittle down the Imperial Order, had just been nullified. Worse than nullified, their work had been erased, and nearly that many more had been added to the force the enemy had started with.
Dear spirits, Kalin whispered. How many men does the old world have to throw at us?
When she met Warren's gaze, she knew that this number even was hardly surprising to him. Warren gestured to the scout.
Hayes saw only the first group. The men we captured told us about the reinforcements. We weren't sure they were telling us the truth. We thought they might be trying to spook us. But then we met up with Corporal Hayes on his way back. We did some further questioning and scouting. That's why we were delayed in returning.
Another 250,000. Kalin's words trailed off. It all seemed so hopeless. Warren cleared his throat.
That is just the first column of fresh troops. More are coming.
Kalin went to the hearth and warmed her hands as she stared into the flames. She was standing beneath the statue Richard had carved for her to make her feel better. Kalin wished at that moment she could recall the defiant feeling spirit portrayed. It felt as if she could only contemplate death. The news of the Imperial Order reinforcements, just as the news of the departure of the Galleans and Keltons, spread through the camp faster than a storm wind. Kalin, Zed, Warren, Verna, Addie, General Myford, and all the rest of the officers held nothing back from the men. Those men were risking their lives daily and had a right to the truth. If Kaelin was passing through the camp, and a soldier was brave enough to ask her, she told him what she knew. She tried to give them confidence, too, but she didn't lie to them. The men, having struggled for so long, were beyond fear. The bleak mood was a palpable pall, smothering the spark of life out of them. They went about their tasks as if numb, accepting their fate, which now seemed sealed, resigned to the inevitable. The new world offered no shelter, no safe place, nowhere to hide from the boundless menace of the Imperial Order. Kaelin showed the soldiers a determined face. She had no choice. Captain Ryan and his men, having been through such despair before, were less troubled by the news. They couldn't die. They were already dead. Along with Kaelin, the young Galeans had long ago taken an oath of the dead, and could only be returned to life when the Order was destroyed. None of it mattered much to Captain Zimmer and his men. They knew what needed to be done, and they simply kept at it. Each of them now had multiple strings of ears. They began new strings at 100. It was a matter of honor to them that they kept only the right ear, so no two ears could be from the same man. Representative Theriault of Hershborg was as good as his word. The white wool cloaks, hats, and mittens arrived weekly, helping hide the men who regularly went on missions, while the weather was in their favor, to attack the Imperial Order. With the sickness in the Order's camp leaving so many of them weak, along with so many of the enemy having impaired vision, those missions were extraordinarily successful. Troops wearing the concealing cloaks were also sent to lie in wait and intercept any supply trains, hoping to neutralize the reinforcements before they could join with the enemy's main force. Still, the attacks were little more than an annoyance to the Order. Kaelin, after a meeting with the group just returned, found Zed alone in the lodge looking over the latest information that had been added to the maps. "Good fortune," she said when he looked up, watching as she removed her fur mantle. "The men who just got in had few casualties, and they caught a large group out at patrol. They were able to cut them off and take them all out, including one of Jagang's sisters."
"Then why the long face?"
She could only lift her hands in a forsaken gesture of futility.
"Try not to be so disheartened," Zed told her. "Despair is often war's handmaiden. I can't tell you how many years it was, back when I was young, that everyone fighting for their lives in that war back then thought that it was only a matter of time until we were crushed. We went on to win."
"I know, Zed, I know." Kaelin rubbed at the chill in her hands. She almost hated to say it, but she finally did. "Richard wouldn't come to lead the army because he said that the way things stand now we can't win. He said whether or not we fight the Order, the world will fall under its shadow. And if we fight, it will only result in more death, that our side will be destroyed, the Order would still rule the world, and any chance for winning in the future would be lost." Zed peered at her with one eye.
"Then, what are you doing here?"
"Richard said we can't win. But, dear spirits, I can't let myself believe that. I would rather die fighting to be free, to help keep my people free, than to live the death of a slave. Yet I know I'm violating Richard's wishes. His advice, and his orders. I gave him my word. I feel as if I'm treading the quicksand of betrayal and taking everyone with me." She searched his face for some sign that Richard might have been wrong. "You said that he had figured out the wizard's sixth rule on his own, that we must use our minds to see the reality of the way things are. I had hopes. I thought he had to be wrong about the futility of this war, but now..." Zed smiled to himself, as if finding fancy in something she saw as only horrifying.
"This is going to be a long war. It is far from beyond hope, much less decided. This is the agony of leadership in such a struggle, the doubts, the fears, the feelings of hopelessness. Those are feelings, not necessarily reality. Not yet. We have much yet to bring to bear. Richard said what he believed, based on the way matters stood at the time he said them. Who is to say that the people are not now prepared to prove themselves to him, prove themselves ready to reject the order? Perhaps what Richard needed in order for him to commit to the battle has already come about.
But I know how strongly he warned me against joining this battle. He meant what he said. Still, I don't have Richard's strength, the strength to turn my back and let it happen. Kaelin gestured to her inkstand on the table. I've sent letters asking that more troops be sent down here. He smiled again, as if to say that proved it could be done.
It will take continual effort to grind down the enemy's numbers. I think we have yet to deal the Order a truly serious blow. But we will. The sisters and I will come up with something. You never know in matters of this kind. It could be that we will suddenly do something that will send them reeling.
Kaelin smiled and rubbed his shoulder. Thanks, Zed. I'm so thankful to have you with us. Her gaze wandered to Spirit standing proudly above the hearth. She stepped over to the mantel as if to an altar that held the sacred carving. Dear spirits, I miss him. It was a question without the words, hoping he would surprise her with something he had thought of to help get Richard back.
I know, dear one. I miss him, too. He's alive. That's the most important thing.
Kaelin could only nod. Zed clapped his hands together as if taken with a gleeful thought.
What we need, more than anything, is something to get everyone's mind off the task at hand for a while, something to give them a reason to cheer together for a while. It would do them more good than anything.
Kaelin frowned over her shoulder. Like what? You mean some kind of game or something? His face was all screwed up in musing.
I don't know. Something happy? Something to show them that the Order can't stop us from living our lives, can't stop us from the enjoyment of life, of what life is really all about.
He stroked a thumb along the sharp line of his jaw.
Any ideas?
Well, I can't really think of... Just then Warren strode in. Just got a report from over in the Drun Valley. Our lucky day. No activity as we expected. He stopped dead in his tracks, his hand still holding the door lever, looking from Kaelin to Zed and back again. What's the matter? What's going on? Why are you two looking at me like that? Verna came up behind Warren and gave him a shove into the lodge. Go on, get in there, close the door. What's the matter with you? It's freezing out there. Verna huffed and shut the door herself. When she turned around and saw Zed and Kaelin, she backed a step.
Verna! Warren!
Zed said in a honeyed voice.
Come on in, won't you?
Verna scowled. What are you two scheming and grinning at?
Well,
Zed drawled as he winked at Kaelin,
the Mother Confessor and I were just discussing the big event.
Verna's scowl darkened as she leaned in. What big event? I've heard nothing about any big event. Even Warren, rarely given to scowling, was scowling now. That's right. What big event?
Your wedding, Zed said.
Both Verna and Warren's scowls evaporated as they straightened. They were overcome with surprised, silly, radiant grins.
Really?
Warren asked.
Really?
Verna asked.
Yes, really, Kaelin said.
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.